Hey everybody, welcome to Unscripted Unlimited. I'm your humble, gracious, and drop-dead sexy host, Big Daddy Dan Hummer. I'm here with my brother Doug.
Yeah, the not-so-sexy, but 10 times more gassy brother.
And we're here with our, and we're here with our best buddy Eric.
What's up, guys?
Not too much. How's everyone doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Got a lot to get into.
Pretty good.
A lot of fun stuff. We got our USC spotlight, UFC on George St. Pierre. We have our character spotlight on Carnage, and we're going to be talking about the new movie that just came out, Venom: Let There Be Carnage. And we got our comic spotlight on Superman: Birthright, and we got our cartoon spotlight on the Flintstones. So we got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Before we do all that, let's go to Doug with the plugs.
Okay. Make sure you listen to Boxman and Smirk, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, Wednesday nights, Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes, around 10:15, 10:20-ish Eastern Time. Eric has been joining them also on Wednesday nights. I think Eric's is trying to get used to being on another show just in case we finally decide to fire him. So make sure you listen to that every Wednesday night. Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes, and then you can catch him Friday nights around 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for the Hollywood Hangout. Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes. Listen to us Friday nights, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time here on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. This upcoming Friday night, we will be doing the AEW WCW 96 from 98 comparison show.
We've been building up to this for a very long time.
Yeah.
Well, for 3 weeks.
Yeah. It's been quite the build. We talked about both companies, the pros and cons. Now we're going to basically compare them and basically reveal why they pretty much are the same exact company. Except for, I think Eric Bischoff had better hair than Tony Khan. So make sure you listen to that. October 22nd, we will be counting down the top 20 greatest wrestlers of all time. Eric has been working very hard on this list. Very, very hard.
Thank you.
Boxman from the Dirt Sheet Dudes will be joining us. We may have other guests yet. It just depends on whether or not I remember to reach out to them.
Reach out to them.
I'm going to try.
I know.
And I have an announcement.
Okay.
I already made a joke.
I'm 8 weeks due. No. Next week, we will be doing an Unscripted Unlimited show. The week after, we will be not, because that is my birthday weekend. But the week after, when we come back, you know what date that is? Give the date to the people, Doug.
October 30th.
October 30th, Halloween weekend. We will be finally doing... After all this watching of Big Brother, we will be doing our house guest tier list.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be taking every Big Brother house guest that has ever walked through the house, or at least the seasons I've seen, which is mostly all of them, except for like 1 through 5. And we're going to be ranking them in tiers based on gameplay.
Yeah, I will be on next week.
I know. This is in 3 weeks.
I thought you were going to be on next week.
No, you said he wouldn't.
Yeah, I got the dates messed up. I thought it was next week I was working closing.
Oh.
It's actually the week that we're not doing a show, so that works out.
Yeah. So you are going to be on next week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I got other plans for that, but...
Yeah.
When we come back, we will be doing the Big Brother House Guest tier list.
That's exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is that why you wouldn't tell me this before?
Yeah. And I'll name drop a couple of things we're doing next week at the end of the show. But you want to get into it?
Yes, sir.
Cool. Tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, you're going to be Scaredy Cats.
Yes.
And you're going to be talking the Tommy Jarvis trilogy, right, of Friday the 13th?
Yes, part 4 through 6.
Yeah. And then, of course, Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, catch Eric Clintus and Stevie for Hard Hits.
Yes. Is that it? We got anything
yes,
else?
Yes, sir.
Sean Fedchek's YouTube channel, Elite Diplodoc, and his Twitch channel, Sneaky Fetty.
Yes, make sure to check him out. Great guy. Very handsome. Good kid. Smells good. He's going to go far in life. All right, let's get into it. The Flintstones.
Knows how to pick football games. Well, kind of pick football games.
But not as good as me. Or did he beat me?
No, you beat him.
Okay, good. All right, the Flintstones. We're going to start here. This is your cartoon spotlight, Doug. Obviously, this one is very near and dear to your heart.
Very much so.
Tell the good people why you picked this one.
I picked this one because I can actually relate a lot to both Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble. And the reason why I say that is because I could be as big of a dick as Fred Flintstone is sometimes, but I also, like, Fred does have a heart.
Mm-hmm.
And Barney Rubble is just like, sometimes he is just so clueless. Again, also another attribute of mind. I just feel like that, like, if I could ever relate to both, like, a main character and a sidekick, like, it's this show. And they're, like, two of my, like, all-time favorite cartoon characters. Like, if we ever did, like, our top 10, like, favorite, like, cartoon characters.
Yeah. All
right, these two would more than likely be at the top of my list.
Where do the wives rank?
I always thought Betty Rubble was attractive.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with that.
When I was 10, or like even younger than that. Wilma, I just thought busted Fred's balls too much.
But she is a very loyal wife to him.
Yeah, she is. except for at the end of each episode when she fails to answer the door when the tiger locks him out of the house. But like Fred and Barney, they're just, you know, they were two funny characters, like the chemistry with, you know, those two characters was just amazing. Dino, you know, every time Fred walks in the house, Dino jumps on him.
Yeah. Bam Bam.
Bam Bam. You know, Pebbles was adorable.
Which one are you, Doug?
Baby Puss.
Really? I mean, I usually jump on Dango whenever he enters the house.
Pebbles is a Flintstone, right?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I always enjoyed watching this when I was a kid. It's one of the most successful cartoons of all time, for sure. I mean, we got movies. This is like a whole franchise.
Right. And the funny thing about this is you know how, like, you know, we sometimes talk about in wrestling, like, the big three?
Yeah.
You know, WWF. Or WWE, WCW, and ECW.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s, the big three as far as cartoons were concerned, and we've talked about this before, were the Flintstones, Scooby-Doo, and the Jetsons.
Yeah.
Now, from the 1960 till about, you know, the mid-90s, the Flintstones were the most consistent because they had, you know, the six seasons of the show, and then Pebbles and Bam Bam had a spinoff for a little while when they became teenagers.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, Pebbles and Bam Bam show, I think it was called, where they were teenagers and they were actually in a rock band.
Okay.
And then, like, you had, like, all the, like, Flintstones cartoon movies, including when Pebbles and Bam Bam got married and then when they had a baby. And then the Flintstones also had two cartoons or two Christmas specials. I mean,
yeah.
One of which was called the Flintstones Christmas Carol, which I don't remember anything really about it. But another one, Flintstone Christmas, I believe, Fred actually had to take Santa's place because Santa sprained his ankle falling off the Flintstone roof. So Fred and Barney took over for him. And what was funny is that, like, Fred was too busy being Santa. He forgot that he had to portray Santa
at the school or at the church or somewhere where like Wilma and Betty and Pebbles and Bam Bam were. He's like, oh, yeah, that's right. I got to be Santa. Right. And he already was actually being Santa for the night.
Yeah.
Because he had to take over. But, like, and then, you know, in the 90s, you had the Flintstone Kids spinoff, you know, which was around.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Came a little bit after, you know, a pup named Scooby-Doo. Obviously, the Flintstones live-action movie, you know, in 1994. Then later on, when they did the prequel, you know, Viva Rock Vegas. But it's just, they were such a successful friend. I mean, you really don't see much of them now.
Yeah.
But they kind of had a resurgence a few years ago when WWE did a movie with them.
The Stone Age SmackDown.
Yeah, which I still haven't seen yet, by the way.
You know, that I heard that... Seth MacFarlane was going to do a reboot in 2011, but the Fox Entertainment president didn't like the script too much. Do you think that would have worked at all, or do you think Seth MacFarlane was probably not the right guy to helm?
Not the Flintstones.
Yeah.
Because he would turn it into too much of like an adult cartoon. Like he would try to turn it into a Stone Age Family Guy. And don't mess with that premise.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be adult. It's good for kids. I mean, there's Flintstone theme parks, for God's sakes. Or there used to be.
Yeah.
And don't forget also...
Yeah, I mean, Fruity Pebbles is still probably one of the greatest selling cereals of all time.
Yeah.
Cocoa Pebbles, Fruity Pebbles.
Marshmallow Fruity Pebbles I have now. Cinnamon Fruity Pebbles.
I love Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, Cinnamon Pebbles, not Cinnamon Fruity Pebbles. Yeah. I think I've bought a forest before.
So they're still making money off this show how many years later?
Yeah. I mean, like, Fred and, like, they don't really do cereal commercials anymore or, like, the Flintstone cereal commercials. But still, like, Fred and Barney are still on the box.
Yeah, it's like, you got to think. Out of all their, like, cereal, like, how many different, like, cartoon cereals have there been or, like, on different properties and different stuff? And then it lasts for a little bit. But it's not big. This is like one of the big cereals. Like you think of Captain Crunch, you think of Fruity Pebbles and shit. You think of Cookie Crisp and fucking Count Chocula and shit.
Yeah, I mean,
they've almost become cereal mascots almost as much as they are TV show things.
Right, and like, and that's the funny thing too is that like it was probably not necessarily one of the first kid cereals, but. It was so popular for so long.
Yeah.
And that just, it goes, again, it goes to show, like, Flintstones, like, you know, I mentioned the big three earlier, right?
Yeah.
Flintstones, in my opinion, will always be big. It will always be bigger than the Jetsons. And even though, like, Scooby-Doo is still technically around to this day because they do, like, so many iterations of it.
Yeah, those two are right there with each other, I think. They're both pretty big.
Yeah. I mean, and also, too, Flintstones had a comic book.
Yes.
Which I am trying to win some right now. I mean, not right now. The thing ends in a few days. But
but soon.
But they have a comic book. They had a board game. Obviously, video games, action figures.
The whole nine.
Basically anything to make them a, you know, a successful franchise. And it all started with the cartoon. And, like, it's funny. I was thinking about, like, some of, like, the better, like, Flintstone moments or something like that.
Yeah.
And I remember the episode, mainly because I saw it, like, 6 months ago, where Betty and Barney wanted to adopt Bam Bam. Because he was left on their doorstep. And,
oh, yeah.
So they wanted to adopt him, but then somebody... but then somebody else wanted him.
Yeah.
Okay? So they go through the court case, and the people that were trying to get Bam Bam, they had, like, this hotshot, like, TV lawyer. I can't remember who it was. And they won the case. Because the hotshot TV lawyer, you know, was kind of good at his job.
Right.
So Barney
said, like, you know what, I don't deserve to live. So he tied, like, a rock or something to his foot or something, and he was going to jump into a creek. Well, after...
Man, that's pretty deep for the cornstones.
Yeah. Crazy. He was going to jump off a bridge into a creek. Yeah, it was, like, very sad, but then, like, at the end, the guy or the father or the guy that won the court case got a call from his wife saying, we don't need Bam Bam. I'm pregnant. So the Rubbles can have the baby. So the lawyer goes and tells Fred, Betty, and Wilma go to find Barney, who's standing on this bridge ready to jump into a creek. So Barney, so Fred tells Barney, he's like, Barney, you can get off there now. You can have Bam Bam. You know, so-and-so's wife is pregnant. They're going to have a baby of their own. He goes, oh, cool. So Fred takes the rope that was tied to the rock and to Barney's foot. And poor Fred ends up in the freaking creek. So, like, poor Fred trying to do the right thing.
Where did it fucking get him?
Yeah. I saw that, I was just like, Fred, don't take the rope!
Yeah. I mean, this show is iconic for various reasons.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the greatest cartoons of all time.
Yeah, and when we did the top 10 greatest cartoons of all time countdown, this actually made it in at number 9.
Right.
Which I wasn't necessarily happy about because, you know, I thought it should have been higher.
Yeah.
But also...
should have been top 5.
Yeah, I agree. It almost didn't make the list. Like, it didn't actually make the list until that morning when I did the final... I did it, like, the day before.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Because Eric and I ran another poll to try to get more... Because I was trying to get them on the list.
Yeah.
And it wasn't working. Because everybody wanted, you know, all the, like, action cartoons to make it on there. But it made it on there. I can't remember who it bumped. I think it bumped the Justice League off.
Really?
It either bumped the Justice... Yeah, because it bumped the Justice League off, I believe.
Sons of bitches.
And Tom and Jerry almost made it, but it bumped the Justice League off, and it knocked the DuckTales down to 10.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that was, like, a controversial list in itself. But,
that was,
you know,
a fun episode.
I love that episode. I can't wait to do more cartoon countdowns if we ever get a chance. But, yeah, I mean, Flintstones, one of my all-time favorite cartoons. I can relate heavily with Fred and Barney and Dino, to be honest with you. mainly because I always liked the color of Dino, too. I always thought it was a great shade of purple.
It is a great shade of purple.
And also...
Which one do you relate to more? Friend of Barney.
I don't know. What do you think? You hang around me enough.
Probably Barney.
Really? I was going to say
I don't know.
Right. We'll put a poll up on Facebook and see what everybody says.
Daniel's a tiebreaker.
Come Bam Bam.
Yeah, mainly because Bam Bam has thrown Fred around a couple of times. But also, one more thing I do want to add about the Flintstones. You can't forget the Flintstone vitamins.
They still have those, don't they?
Yeah. I believe so, yeah. Do they come in gummies now, Dan?
Yeah, they always came in gummies.
They did?
No, not when I was a kid.
Well, when I was born.
Yeah. I mean, there is a little bit of an age gap.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Flintstones, great cartoon. Hell of a franchise.
I completely agree. I think it's a fantastic cartoon, and everyone should go watch it right now. Or on tomorrow morning.
Flintstone. Meet the Flintstone.
But it's the greatest open, though, where, like, the buzzer goes off, or the buzzer or whatever goes off, and then you just hear Fred go, yeah, man, that man, no! Like, you and I should do that one day before we leave work.
We should.
Yeah.
We're going to now, Monday.
All right, let's move on.
We have that scene, right?
Yes. Hell of a cartoon.
Yeah.
Hell
definitely.
Of a cartoon. Now
we're doing that Monday afternoon.
Now let's move on to a great, great comic. Our comic spotlight for this week, Superman Birthright. Eric, did you look this up?
Yes. It was a miniseries that came out in 2003, if I remember.
Yes, sir.
Is it one of your favorite comics?
It's my favorite origin for Superman. Because in comic books, a lot of characters, the origin story is basically how they became. A lot of the movies you see are their origin story. Like, how did this person become a superhero? Superman has had, like, 10 origin stories written about him throughout. Because he's been around since the 30s. So a lot of people have tried to...
God, he's old.
He's very old. Now, a lot of people try to take on the origin of Superman. The origin before this was John Byrne's Man of Steel series in the late 80s. But this actually took that over, and DC considered this the superior and the take that you should follow as a Superman origin. And I agree with you.
It was a limited series.
It was.
Only 2003 and 2004. How many editions did they have?
12 issues.
Do you have all 12?
I read all 12 this week on my DC Universe Infinite app. I don't know the physical copies, but I read the whole series this past couple weeks. And, yeah, I thought it was phenomenal. I thought – because I always knew how Superman came to be, but I really wanted to read, like, a definitive origin for him. And, you know, the artwork of this is beautiful, by the way. I don't know if you looked up some of the pictures or anything, but the artist, Lanil Francis Yu, did a very good job. And Mark Wade, who this is written by, he really understands Superman. And I love the whole dynamic with him and Lex Luthor, which I know you were talking about it earlier, Doug.
Yeah.
Well, because Superman, it kind of took me back to Smallville.
Yeah.
Like... because, you know, in Smallville, Lex and Clark were friends, you know, at least for the first couple of seasons.
Yeah.
And, like, it almost said to me, like, reading this or looking this up, to me, it almost felt like Lex Luthor. Why the fuck do I keep calling him Lex Luthor? Lex Luthor was so misunderstood.
Yeah.
And, like, he just wanted friends. And then, you know, Clark tried to be his friend. Unfortunately, Lex had a piece of, you know, Kryptonian, you know, rock or whatever that was going to kill Clark. I mean, he got mad at Clark because Clark was just standing there or whatever. But Clark was also slowly dying inside.
Yeah, that was one of the funnier parts of the book for me because he was showing him this great invention, but had kryptonite in it. So Superman's fucking hurt, and he's sitting there like, ah! And he's like, why are you making that face? You don't understand me like everybody else. It's like, no, Lex, he's fucking dying. Like, Superman's hurt, so he threw him out because he didn't know he was Superman at the time. He eventually obviously figures it out when you hear of Superman coming to Metropolis. One of the cool things about this
it changes a lot of things for Superman's beginnings. One of those things is, instead of the Kents being very, positive and wanting to see him do really well, his dad, Pa, or whatever, is Jonathan Kent. He's kind of not cool with him being Superman, and he wants him to just be Clark Kent and his son. And that dynamic was really cool to me. And I just like his, they start to kind of build him and Lois getting together, and they're just flirting, and they're coworkers right now. I think it sets up a lot of stuff, and it makes you want to read more Superman stuff.
Yeah. And the funny thing about it is, and again, I'm not much of a Superman guy. I prefer Batman, but like the whole dynamic, again, the dynamic between Clark and Lex is kind of cool. Lois basically, like, you know, because it's said in the comic or whatever that, you know, Lois kind of had a crush on Superman, but she wouldn't give Clark the time of day.
Yeah.
You know, which is weird to me because, like, you know, the dynamic that they have, you know, in the movies and, like, TV shows that they did.
Yeah.
So, like, to me, that's just kind of weird. It's just like, wait a minute, Superman, Lois thought that Clark was an idiot?
Well, that's funny. It's actually at the end of the book, Clark asked her out on a date, and she says no. And he said, oh, would it be better if I could leap tall buildings or something like that? So he made a joke about it, and then she got pissed off at him. But, yeah, I thought the book ended really well, too, about him kind of writing to his parents back home in Kansas.
Yeah.
And you kind of see, like, the finale of what happened with his parents on Krypton and why he got sent to the U.S. So I just thought overall it's a 5-star book for me. I thought it was – or 10 stars, whatever. I really enjoyed it.
Depends on what show you're on and how many stars you're going to use.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
Now, are these comics rare to get?
This one – it's not incredibly rare. It might be worth a little bit of money, but it's not very old. It's just 2003. But it's one of the better stories. It's one of the altogether, the 12 issues as a whole, it's one of the better, like, standalone stories for Superman. So I think any collector or any comic book fan should have this in it, or at least read this if you're more of a digital guy, like I'm becoming. So you should at least read this story if you're a Superman fan, because it gives you everything you love about Superman. It's not dark and gritty. He's this kind of light, bright, you know, shining hero.
Right.
He's the good guy.
Exactly.
Like this whole comic just like instates how much of a good dude he is.
Right.
And I like it because it's not like a dull Superman either. He actually seems like a chill fucking dude.
Yeah, he does. I mean, unfortunately, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, like, when it comes out or whatever, but, like, Injustice kind of turns him into, you know, a monster.
Yeah.
You know, because of all that, but that's another story. But now, was Injustice a comic, too?
Yeah. It did start with the video games, though. It was an original story for the video games, and then they made a comic series based off of it, and now they're doing the animated movie that just came out.
Okay.
Well, we're going to have to talk about all that at some point.
Yeah, we got to watch the movie soon. But I like the evil Superman trope. I think it's cool, and especially because you can probably do brain control on him and make him evil. But I like my Superman to be a good guy, and this is probably my favorite Superman. Just he's nothing more. Oh shit, I deleted this. But he's nothing more than just the symbol of hope, and that's what he's supposed to be. So I think that's what I really enjoyed about the book. Is there any other tidbits that you noticed, Eric?
Not really. I just thought it was, I didn't know it was a limited series until I read about it. Yeah.
It is a limited series, but like I said, DC did say that this is a part of basically the DC universe. This is the origin that you need to know when it's Superman. Like this is a part of his story pretty much.
Going on here.
With that being said, let's move on to the UFC spotlight.
Mr. George St. Pierre.
Take it away, Eric.
Mr. George St. Pierre, one of the greatest, not just I mean, Usman is making them run for best welterweight of all time, but as of right now, George St. Pierre is probably the GOAT of the welterweight. As of right now. That could change in a month when Usman faces Covington and he wins and continues to win. At the end of the day, he could take that crown. But George St. Pierre, one of the greatest of all time, not just welterweight. He's just a unique fighter. He's probably one of the best, one of the most popular fighters. He's from Montreal, Canada. He had a pretty good long title reign, second longest combined title streak in UFC history, defending his 9 consecutive times. He's a 2-time welterweight champion because he lost to Matt Serra in, what year was that? He got knocked out by Matt Serra and then got revenge a couple months later.
I would definitely say that he is the greatest welterweight of all time. George St. Pierre has done some incredible fucking things. Just the fact that he left in 2013 and he came back 4 years later, and honestly, one of my favorite middleweights of all time, Michael Bisping. I love his trash talk. I love everything about him. And then he comes and beats his ass with a rear naked choke. Like, this man is a stud. He's been forever. I mean, I would say he's the GOAT. He literally just got put in the Hall of Fame last week. There's not too much you can say about him negative. He's literally won one or lost two fights in his whole career against two sure potential Hall of Famers. I think Matt Serra's already in there. If Matt Hughes isn't, he should be. But the win over BJ Penn, the comeback wins over Matt Hughes and Matt Serra. I just watched the Carlos Condit fight a couple hours ago, and holy shit, what a bloodbath that was, you know? Jake Shields.
And he can do it all. He can box, he's an all-around good fighter. Oh, sorry, Daniel.
No, don't be sorry. But you're right, he's a hell of a wrestler, he's a good grappler, he can choke you out, he can punch the shit out of you, he can go the distance. He's gone the distance numerous times, and he always wins when he goes the distance.
And then big knock on him was that he did go distance. He was kind of one fighter to a lot of casual, as I call it. I mean, a lot of fans. But I thought he was very good and very entertaining.
I thought he was entertaining. I think if you can go 5 rounds and keep it entertaining, and it doesn't matter. He's there to win, and it's not like he's not trying to beat the shit out of these guys. He was. Look at Carlos Condit. Look at Nick Diaz. They're all battered and blooded at the end of the fight. So he did give a shit. He's a fighter.
And he's
fighter.
Still only 40 years old.
Yeah.
He could come back if he wanted to.
He's touched on it, and he said that his days of trying to be the baddest man on the planet are over, but he would be open to a potential super fight someday or a big money payday fight or something like that. Maybe a boxing.
I would like to see him and Usman go at it to see who really is the GOAT.
Will Jake Paul be calling him?
Probably not. I don't think he'll fight Jake Paul. He's around the size that Jake Paul likes, but I there's a bunch of welterweights I'd like to see, St. Pierre fight. I think him and Colby would be
Covington.
Fun. Yeah.
Yep. And, what's his name? I forgot his name.
Jorge?
Masvidal.
Yeah.
Jorge Masvidal.
I think he would kill
that would
him.
Be...
I think he would.
Yeah, he would.
And even, like, if he came back at middleweight, him and Izzy would be fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And there's numerous things he could do. So it would be fun. I think as far as legacy, though, he really doesn't have anything to prove. I don't blame him for staying
no,
there
he
if he wanted to. Because you're talking 26 and 2. One of the greatest MMA legacies of all time.
Exactly. It's just like like DC, he didn't need to prove anything when he retired. Khabib, he didn't need to prove anything. I mean, there's an argument for Khabib. He retired maybe too soon, but he retired 29-0, but that's another story for another day. But, yeah, I would have loved to see George St. Pierre versus Anderson Silva. It's too bad that we never got a chance to see that super fight.
But now that
they're
boxing, we might get a super fight boxing match. I think if they, because Anderson is killing it with the boxing. He just knocked out Tito Ortiz in 30 seconds.
Damn. Speaking of boxing, there's a big boxing match tonight.
Yeah, Wilder and Fury, a heavyweight showdown. Wilder and Fury 3.
Yep.
Should be interesting.
Oh, yeah, I think Fury's going to win, but we'll see.
Me too. Not really more MMA, but I think Fury will get the dub.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah, James, you want to touch on him a little bit?
I mean, I've enjoyed the fights that I've seen him do.
Yeah.
I mean, 26-2, that's actually a pretty good record for an MMA fighter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Underrated. I think he's underrated sometimes by fans.
I think he's underrated too, and I think he's underrated for his lack of trash talk. But I also, that's what I love and appreciate about George St. Pierre, because he's not really a cocky guy. He might seem a little arrogant when you like look at him and that little smirk that he gives, but in promos and stuff, he's nothing but respectful. He's a very nice guy, and he's just there to be a competitor. Yep. He's, to me, what makes MMA legit, because he's just there to be the best in the world. He's there to train hard, win his fights, and keep on moving. Not for all the silly gimmick shit or acting stupid or, you know, as much as I love Tuivasa chugging beers out of shoes and shit, he's just there to get his shit done, you know, train for his fight, win his fight, and be the best in the world. And I think that's one of the things I appreciate so much about him.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I appreciate Uzma, too. He's the same way. He goes in there, proves his he's the best.
I mean, Usman's a shit
and then,
but
you get
I get what you're saying.
Usman
I think
can be a trash talker when he can.
I think Usman just shit talks just because I think he knows that's what you got to do to sell the fight. But it never really feels genuine from him. I feel like he's just a competitor too.
Yeah, exactly.
Which that's St. Pierre. I think that's all you can really call him as a competitor. He's got a nice haircut now too. But I've always I really enjoy him. I'd be happy if he stayed retired and leave his legacy alone. But if you come back for a super fight, I guess it would be fun. I'd pay to see it.
Yep.
I'd pay to see it, too.
Now, our last spotlight, our character spotlight. A young man named Cletus Cassidy, but also goes by the name of Carnage. Eric, I asked you to look this up, too. What did you find?
He was a villain in Spider-Man.
Yes, sir.
He was kind of an ugly character looking, but
yeah,
he's
a brutal red motherfucker.
His first appearance was in the Amazing Spider-Man. He was in the comics too.
Yeah, oh, definitely. He was now the character of Carnage started out, and you touched on this earlier, and we'll talk about it, because the symbiote has gone from various different things. But the symbiote of Carnage, it's actually an offshoot of the symbiote that's on Venom. And the symbiote, it's like an alien thing, and it can attach to a human host and make it a superpowered individual. That's what a symbiote is. Now, we know the Venom symbiote, and it's got Eddie Brock. And Eddie Brock's just a reporter, kind of a douchebag, not a bad guy. But this takes – now, what if a symbiote attached to a bad guy? Now, the Carnage symbiote is also stronger, tougher, harder than Venom, but its host is Cletus Cassidy, who happens to be a serial killer. He got brought in on 11 charges of murder, and he bragged that he did a dozen more.
One of the people he killed when he was younger, he killed his grandma.
Yes.
He pushed her down the stairs, which already, like, obviously not a quality guy. He tried to kill his mother by dropping something. What did he drop in the bathtub?
It was a hair dryer.
Yeah, he dropped a hair dryer in the bathtub to electrocute her.
Yeah. And somehow she survived, and then she tried to kill him. And then his father's like, no, you can't kill him. And then almost basically killed her. Or
yes.
Almost did, right?
Yes.
It's
very badass. And he's my favorite Marvel villain, my favorite Spider-Man villain. And there's something I always liked about it, because I always thought Spider-Man villains to be very corny when I was younger. And I never really thought they were a threat. He is an actual huge threat. This guy is a badass. He's known for his first appearance. He fought Spider-Man. Spider-Man lost. Spider-Man never loses. But Spider-Man got his fucking ass kicked, so he had to go back, and it's known for him. He actually makes an alliance with Venom, even though Venom's a villain. So those two have to work together, and they finally beat Carnage. But that's what this whole character is known for, is the guy that Spider-Man couldn't beat, so he had to get help from a bad guy.
Damn.
Jesus Christ.
So he's a fucking badass. If you really want to find a good comic arc with him, we'll probably talk about it someday, but Maximum Carnage is a good one. There's been a bunch of other ones, but he is super badass, Superior Carnage. I mean, there's so many stories with him in it. But he really is an evil, sadistic bastard. And I think that's why I like him so much.
But, yeah. I mean, and again, like, from what I read about him, it's just, like, I would not want to, you know, encounter this guy in the middle of the street.
No.
Unless I was driving and he was walking, then I know I'd be safe.
It's, he's one of the cooler ones, and I'm glad we finally got to see him in a movie, and I will touch on that in a few minutes here. But he's one of the more visually, like, I know Eric said ugly. I agree, but in a beautiful way, too, because it's just such good art. And he's just, the way he's drawn, he's just such a fucking, like, the symbiote is just scary looking. It's big, it's red, you know, the teeth. He can make a hammer out of his thing. And, like, he should be rated R. And that's the only thing about Venom Let There Be Carnage is it's PG-13. But Woody Harrelson actually takes the helm as Carnage, as Cletus Cassidy, and he does a really good job.
Woody Harrelson is actually really good at playing a scumbag.
Yeah.
But also, too, like, if you look at a lot of the stuff Woody Harrelson has been in, there's three things there's actually two things he's really good at. He's really good at playing a dumbass, and he's really good at playing a scumbag.
Yeah.
But both of those things, he is good at, you know, being funny in both of them.
Yeah.
So he can put his own comedic twist on either role.
Yeah. He did a really good job in the movie. Yeah. And this movie, I mean, this movie has kind of helped movies in general. This thing has grossed $118 million, the biggest box office opening of the pandemic so far.
Yeah.
So movies are starting to make money again, and this is one of the reasons why. It's a 90-minute movie. I would recommend anyone to go see it. If you're...
Didn't this movie get trashed, though, by a bunch of online critics that don't come out of their mom's basements?
Yeah, critics talk shit about it. People didn't like it that much, but fans loved it, and that's all that fucking matters. It did get shit on critically, and there are some things about it that I understand. One of the things I'm a little kind of skeptical about is at the end, Carnage is kind of set up as a one-shot villain in this. Like, he gets killed pretty, spoiler alert, but, like, it's over at the end. Like, there's not really room for Carnage to come back.
Right.
Because Venom eats the symbiote, and then he eats Woody Harrelson's head off. He says, fuck this guy. He's like, fuck this guy, and then he chomps his head off, which is really cool. But the movie sets up because you see Tom Holland in the end credit scenes. So it's going to set up Venom to the rest of the MCU.
Okay.
So it's badass.
Yeah.
But the Carnage character, he's one of my favorite characters. The villain himself, he's just a bad dude. And it's what happens when a big dude, like a big scary entity, attaches itself to a scumbag, not a good person. And it takes multiple people. The fact that Spider-Man couldn't beat him in his first encounter. Yeah, he loses in the movie, but that's a movie. The comics, which this is based off of, you know, it takes a lot of things to beat him. And he also attaches to other things. Like you said, the symbiote has been on other people besides Cletus Cassidy.
Norman Osborn being one of them, right?
Which
is, now, the Red Goblin.
Yeah.
So obviously a distant relative of the Green Goblin.
Son.
That makes a lot of sense. But I thought, isn't Harry Osborn the son?
Oh, yeah, I think, I don't know what Norman is.
Wasn't Norman, like, Green Goblin? In the original Spider-Man movie, or in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, wasn't he?
Yeah, Norman.
Wasn't his name Norman?
Yeah, Harry's his son.
So what'd they do, flip it here?
No, the Green Goblin gets the Carnage symbiote at some point.
Oh. So he gets a redo?
Yes. Well, there's a couple people that get it. There's even a Spider Carnage at some point. So
yeah, Ben Reilly.
Ben Reilly, yes. With Spider-Man's powers. So Carnage has been around for a very long time. I'm sure he'll keep being around in the comics. Hopefully the movies bring him back somehow. But great character. And I think this is going to do it, guys. Eric, announce your athlete retrospective spotlight for next week.
Let's do the Manning brothers together.
Obviously, Peyton and Eli.
Oh. I like those two.
Well, then it should be a very positive spotlight then.
What's your cartoon, Doug?
Okay, so I've been thinking about this a lot, you know, especially over the last few minutes. Let's do Captain Planet, if we can find the episodes on YouTube.
Okay, Captain Planet. For the cartoon spotlight, we will be doing Captain Planet. And for the comic spotlight, we will be doing Wonder Woman Year One.
Okay.
Which, this is a retelling of Wonder Woman's origins. It happened in 2016. It's about an 8-issue. It's part of the Wonder Woman comic line. So it's not a miniseries, but it's about an 8-issue story arc where they get into her beginnings and her origins. So we're going to be talking about that, and it's all going to tie into the character spotlight, which is Wonder Woman. This is her 80th year of being around. So
she looks good for 80.
She looks very good for 80. We'll be talking about Gal Gadot. We'll be talking about the movies. We'll be talking about her role in the cartoons and stuff. We're going to be touching on, I can't say it like that. We will be talking about Wonder Woman. But
I'm sure there's a lot of people, though, that would like to touch on Gal Gadot, but that's another story.
With all that being said, this was a great epi, guys, and we will see you all next week for Unscripted Unlimited. Love you, Eric.
Bye, guys.
See ya.